what's in the news today?
With so many stories,
dozens of stories,
we're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
All right, stories we've been dying to get to, just haven't had the opportunity. The World Cup's going on right now in Qatar. Belgium leads Canada 1-0. Second half coming up soon. Anyways,
Eddie Van Halen was a pretty famous guitar player.
Yes, he was. Yeah, I think it's a different thing.
Oh,
than what's going on here? Okay. But anyways, there's been a lot of like, how do you pronounce Qatar? Is it Qatar? Is it Qatar? Is it Qatar? And it's not an easy thing to say, right? So the other day, Monday morning, I tried to figure out like the pronunciation for it, and I came across a local guy that lives in Qatar, and he talked about how you pronounce Qatar, and this is how he said you should pronounce it.
The official pronunciation of my country is Qatar.
Qatar.
I'm sorry, what?
The G is kind of like the Q is kind of a
silent.
G. It's like a G, actually. Here it is again.
The official pronunciation of my country is Qatar.
Qatar.
He did the like he got something stuck in his throat at the end. I didn't understand if he was saying it again or.
But it's more of a G than a Q.
He did say later on in this video that it's almost like guitar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost like, but it's more of a G than a Q. And like you have like some weird like, you know, tongue rolling going on here. But it's like guitar. Basically how you
Jeremy,
say it.
You are.
You try how to say it, Brendan.
Guitar.
That's not bad. That was pretty good.
I thought I had it a lot better than you. I didn't think we were close.
That was pretty good. You try to say it, no blankers.
Guitar.
That's not bad
either.
Yeah,
you're the worst at this by far, Jim.
I agree.
You might just be better off with guitar.
Yeah. I like saying guitar. But it's not cutter. It's not cutter. Now, he said if you want to say it like in this like butchered English way, then guitar is fine. But that's how you say guitar if you're interested in that sort of thing. Zach Wilson has been benched. He will be the third. He won't be active for the Jets when they play the Bears.
It's one thing to demote a guy, but to not to deactivate him is another thing.
They're going with Snow White to be their starting quarterback. Joe Flacco will be the backup. Zach Wilson will be inactive. Now, Salah said that this isn't Zach Wilson's end for the Jets. I actually disagree with this. I thought Zach Wilson deserved one more week. Patriots defense is really good. I wanted to see how Zach Wilson responded to a disaster game, handling the press conference poorly. I wanted to see one more week of Zach Wilson before they bench him. The Jets are a team with playoff aspirations, and Mike White ain't a playoff quarterback. Joe Flacco never was elite. He's nowhere near elite. Zach Wilson gives them their best chance, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that this is, as much as we talk about what happened with Brian T. Smith and media scrutiny, I think when you're in New York, it's at a different level, and you feel pressure at a lot higher degree, and I believe that Robert Saleh kind of and the Jets kind of wilted a little bit here because, again, like we talked about as it relates to any franchise quarterback, this is a very emotional blow to a young kid that you, by all intent and purposes, when you drafted this kid, he was your franchise quarterback that now has to try and overcome this. From the press conference side is one thing. From the locker room side is another because you basically alienated your defense. And now from a teammate and a performance standpoint at the quarterback position, he's got to get better all across the board while overcoming the fact that he just got kicked in the groin in front of the entire free world.
Would you guys trade a second-round draft pick for Zach Wilson?
No.
I'm kidding.
No, I would not.
No?
No. If I'm the Texans, I'm not trading a second-rounder for a quarterback.
I was just refreshing.
Unless I'm not.
I know you were, but I'm just saying.
No.
Zach Wilson or Trey Lance. I might. Boy, I'll tell you what.
Now,
No.
If I were to do that, I'm not drafting a quarterback number one. Like, I'm not taking two quarterbacks with two
top picks. That wasn't part
of
Brendan's question, sir. Would you trade a second-round pick for Zach Wilson?
But it's part of my answer. Like, it depends. But I probably lean no regardless. Even if I take Jalen Carter or Willie Anderson number one, I'm not trading pick number 32 for Zach Wilson.
Okay.
No. Would you?
I think I would.
Would you, Brendan?
I like Trey Lance better.
Do you think
we're all over the board now?
Do you think Jake would?
I think he'd probably hold on to Zach Wilson.
Yeah, I think Jake likes him some Zach Wilson.
Apparently, Jake's he likes the move here. I'm surprised by that.
Says, he does?
Right move by the Jets. Wilson needs a reset. Sitting for a game or two isn't the worst idea. Eventually, he'll play again. Look, it's the Patriots. It's Bill Belichick. Like, you're going to have bad games against the Patriots defense and Bill Belichick. Give him one more game. See how he responds. If he stinks, you make the move. I think they jumped the gun here.
I don't disagree that he jumped the gun, but you do. You just see what I'm saying, though, that emotionally and for a lot of reasons, this could be a huge, huge
lift
obstacle to overcome for Zach Wilson.
Yeah. And like, you can also spin to me, well, you know, it helps the locker room. Okay, Mike White's playing quarterback.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't help the product on the field.
You know what helps the locker room more? Wins.
Exactly. Like, it just doesn't.
Well, but they are playing the Bears.
Right, which is, I think, more reason to play White. Get him going.
Yeah, I think you should. I mean, I'm just saying, short term, you play the Bears and you win regardless of who's at quarterback. But the bigger picture is, if you do truly believe you're Randy Mueller was the first to say Super Bowl aspirations, but if you are the Jets and you are have playoff aspirations, you better figure it out real quick.
Like, think of the negative, too. Like, what if Mike White's just lousy this week? Now you're going to go with Flacco? Well, now you're going to go back to Zach Wilson?
God forbid you lose this game this week.
Yeah. I mean, and with Mike, I think Mike White gives him a more of a chance to lose, actually. Arizona Cardinals have fired Sean Coogler. I don't think it's Kevin Coogler's uncle. But Sean Coogler has been fired after reportedly groping a woman while his team was in Mexico City just hours before the team played against the 49ers. He did this on Sunday. Apparently, they sent him home on Sunday. How stupid do you have to be?
Yeah.
Like, you got to be on your P's and Q's, first of all, period, if you're a coach in the NFL. But especially if you're in a foreign country. Like, this is just stupid by Sean Coogler.
And this isn't just an oopsie move. This could be a career-altering move.
Sure.
And this is one that, talk about no-brainers. You didn't use a single brain in your head, at least the one connected to your neck and shoulders, to make this decision. That was asinine. And that, if it cost you, then that is a tough lesson to learn that way. But yeah, it's one thing where it's a no-no just in the States. But if you are with your team traveling, it's an international game. It's huge for the league. It's a big showcase to try and get this game more international, to think about teams playing in outside the country. And this is the look and one of the storylines. That's awful.
Yeah, not good. Hard Knocks are following the Cardinals around for their in-season.
Think they touch this?
I think they have to. I've been watching it. I've been watching.
Have you?
Yeah, I'm current.
Have they?
Actually, I don't think I watched.
Has JJ been prevalent?
He was in the last one. Yeah, yeah, he was
Shocker.
In the last one.
Why
do you dislike JJ?
I don't dislike JJ, and he's a Badger. I just think sometimes he plays the game sometimes too well.
Huh. It sounds like you dislike JJ.
I don't.
I'm judging you right now.
Don't make stories that aren't there. I don't know. I think from a league perspective, this might be one where the league execs pick up the phone and go, "Hey, do us a solid. Stay away from this one."
I don't know how you can ignore it. I think you have to say something and be in and out. Maybe you don't deep dive into it.
You don't feature it and get lots of sound bites and interactions about it. You just mentioned, unfortunately, one of the negatives of making this trip was.
You report the news.
Yeah.
And then you move on as quickly as you can.
Let me know how that goes.
Yeah, I will. Nathaniel Hackett is giving up play calling. The head coach of the Denver Broncos. Nathaniel Hackett also gave up game day management like in week 3 of the season because he was so bad at it. He's given up play calling now because he's been so bad at it. My question is,
what's he doing?
Why are you employing Nathaniel Hackett? Yeah. Like, what is he doing on Sundays other than just being like the forefront of the sidelines? I think we got a one and done in our hands here with Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah, I think, look, from the standpoint, the Broncos are probably saying, thank you, Houston Texans. We're going to be a one and done franchise with a head coach. Thanks for setting the precedent that it's possible, along with what Arizona did it with Bowles. There's been a few different scenarios. No, Arizona, Bowles was Jets, and Arizona did it with the defensive coordinator now for...
You're talking about... Name's escaping me.
Yeah, but it's been done a couple of times. But look, this is a guy that they thought they were going to get Aaron Rodgers.
Vance Joseph.
Nope. They thought they were going to get Aaron Rodgers. So they went and got his offensive coordinator. I guess overlooking the fact that he never called plays for said quarterback in Green Bay, and then realized that he also never really followed Matt LaFleur to figure out what the hell he does too. So as you mentioned, you had to bring in a tutor to help him try and be the head coach on game days. Now you're giving up play calling to somebody else for the whole week, and that was supposed to be the reason why you were there, because your offensive mind and your play calling. I don't get this. I don't know how this guy survives.
Yeah, I think he's done. I think he's done-ski. And also the fact that, look, Russell Wilson, they've committed lots of money to him. You got to try to figure it out. Nathaniel Hackett clearly...
Maybe that means the general manager gets fired, too.
Maybe so.
Because that was a dumb move to trade for him, and then also to extend him when you didn't have to for that amount of money.
I mean, if you're making that kind of trade, though, you have to extend him. And it was just a double whammy. Nick Sirianni, the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, He's being called the biggest D in the NFL. D-back. No other Ds. Yelling in the locker room, yelling in the tunnel, like, you know, putting out for the camera. Apparently in this last game against Indy, where he beat Jeff Saturday in his second career NFL game, he got on the bleachers and was like mother effing the crowd, basically.
I saw him.
I think he's being a tryhard here, trying to be like a native Philadelphian.
I think he's been this way ever since he got the job. He's been over the top and super boisterous and tries to be, whether it be fake tough or not, tries to be super tough. You got to be careful because that can backfire on you. And not that someone's going to punch him or anything like that, but you could have players and otherwise at a certain point where, you know, you wear out your welcome and wears thin on people. You don't need to do all that. I mean, if you're the best team in the NFC and you only got one loss and you were supposed to win that game and you had to fight tooth and nail to win it, act like you've been there before. Walk off the field, pump your fist, and go, you know, basically, thank God we got one.
It's so weird. It's kind of like, a head coach acting that way is foreign, right?
You know what would be worse? What if he got up on the bleachers and said, you suck too?
He might have. He might
quite possible.
I don't know if Bill can climb that high. Who was that Detroit Lions coach that kind of got, is like a hard handshake with one of the Harbaughs?
And then he almost punched him, didn't he?
Jim Schwartz.
I don't know if I'd say he almost punched him. Yeah, they just screamed at each other.
I thought there was contact.
I think it was like a
shoving,
like a physical bro hug.
I don't even think it was that much.
Like maybe like a hard hand.
I think
slap.
You're right. There was definitely.
I think it was a hard hand.
Yeah,
slap.
There was definitely like a swipey handshake and maybe a shoulder to shoulder.
I think it was a hard pat on the back, and then one of them took exception to the pat on the back.
Maybe that was.
That's
it.
Exactly
that,
what happened.
Maybe that was it.
And
yeah,
I think it was
that's what started it. Yeah. Is Jim Schwartz got upset
and
at the initial handshake?
Yeah.
There was nothing after that other than screaming at each
other. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, to end it where we started it, the wife just because I was trying to call her before the segment started. Because she's always adamant to me that it's Cutter. She said her co-anchor in Los Angeles was a correspondent there before getting to the States and always said they pronounce it Cutter.
Well, you know what's,
do they?
You know what's funny about that is this guy, the native dude from Guitar, he actually says that all the correspondents have no idea what they're talking about. He makes fun of the correspondents.
Oh, I'm using this all weekend.
He does. It's a four-minute video. Yeah. He does make fun of them.
He makes fun of all the people
I need
like
the
correspondents
video.
And experts. It's in the rundown. Here's what he said.
The official pronunciation of my country is Qatar.
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 Qatar. Now, if you can't say that, he says, if you just have to be an American about it, it's Qatar. That's what he said.
I love it. I got ammo for a great weekend.
The native dude.
So much, maybe. Though she's mad at me for saying it.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. You mentioned Bill O'Brien, the you suck too.
Yeah.
Would you take the Bill O'Brien years right now? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Would you take the Bill O'Brien years right now? Look, it's hard to say that. I understand. I get it. We know Bill O'Brien's exit from the Houston Texans. I get it all. But right now we're talking about a team that has won one game out of 10, fresh off a 4-win team in which they fired their coach, promoted from within, and got worse. Fresh off a 4-win team prior to that. Quarterback who, even prior to his perverted behavior, was demanding a trade out of town. I mean, the Texans are the worst team in the NFL, right? They are at the very bottom of the NFL, rock bottom of the NFL. Would you trade all of that to have the Bill O'Brien years right now?
I don't want them. I've already been there and done that. I don't want those Bill O'Brien years because I have higher aspirations. I want to get the quarterback right, both on and off the field this time, to get to and beyond a conference championship this time, to get to the Super Bowl for the first time this time. And so, and then you talk about all the off the field between Deshaun and Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby and Bill being the guy that brought Jack and how many more people were turned off just by Jack. I'm going to say hard pass no.
Well, Deshaun liked O'Brien.
He did like O'Brien.
He liked
but you
O'Brien.
Know what? No one likes what had turned out with Deshaun or Bill O'Brien.
Sure, but what we've seen since the Texans have moved on from Bill O'Brien was a 4-win season. Followed by David Culley, who is quite possibly one of the worst NFL head coaches in the history of the game, which was followed by promoting from within an interim head coach in Lovie Smith that hasn't had a winning football season like over a decade in the NFL. They've won one game, and we're watching Davis Mills being trotted out there to see if like he's the guy. And then they bench him today, according to Mike Garofalo. How can you say no to this? Like
I
get the frustration of what you're saying. Like I you didn't reach the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You feel like
you were halfway to, or what was it, halfway to the conference championship?
Not quite. And, like midway through the second quarter.
And he kind of was the architect of not getting there.
Boneheaded decisions for sure.
Okay.
But you rather live in a world where the Texans are winning four games every year, best case scenario, because I don't think they're going to win four games this year, as opposed to four division titles in 6 years, as opposed to playing significant, substantial football games in December, as opposed to actually going to the playoffs and have something to watch your team in the postseason. Sure, it was a failure in the playoffs. Sure, it was a disaster in the playoffs. But you were going to the playoffs as opposed to being a four-win team at best.
But that's the thing, Jeremy. I get it. But you already, basically, if we're making this decision today, you've already endured what I think is the worst of times, and that no matter if you win four games this year or not, but I think starting next season, you're going to see an upward progression. And I believe that hope is so valuable to so many anyway. But the hope is that instead of being a team that's going to win an empty division title and sometimes win it with barely a winning record and then get into the playoffs, the assumption was you're one and done. At the very most, you might get two games out of this. But there never was the overwhelming feeling of, this is a Super Bowl caliber team.
But
this
you don't
is a
feel
team that can win it all.
You don't feel that
not
now.
Not now, yeah. But that this era isn't over to where I think that they could be on the right path to get there.
Look, and I also, like, I'm not saying the Texans should hire Lovie Smith and bring back Bill O'Brien. It's more of a question like, which Texans' life was more miserable? What you're currently living through or what you were living through with Bill O'Brien?
Oh, I don't think there's any question it was Bill O'Brien.
What?
I just told you why.
Won four it has games, nothing four to, games, one
it has
game.
Some things to do with on the field, but when you start talking about the general manager moves, when you start talking about Easterby, when you start talking
Easterby
about
was kind of late in the
Kansas
whole deal,
City
though.
Failure, when you start talking about even with the fans.
Sure, but I
and
mean,
all
like,
the different things that he did, we talked about the
fans. The, what are you like the yelling at the fans?
You suck too and going at them.
There was
and,
more people at games though.
And the whole that's fine, but again, I think that you at your ceiling was just getting in and then shaking your rabbit's foot and hoping for the best, whereas the hope here is that you're constructing a sustainable winner.
That's the thing. That's the thing. It's hope. So, like, what would you rather live through as a Texans fan? The Bill O'Brien years where he was 9-7, 9-7, 9-7, 4-12, 11-5, 10-6, and then fired in 4 years in 2020, or four wins, hopeful to get to four wins. Like, I think life is more miserable now as a Houston Texans fan as it was during Bill O'Brien's time. Because you're going to the playoffs almost every year.
Team performance-wise, I understand that. But I think that when you factor in all of the embarrassment with the off the fields and, you know.
That's
and
still going on.
I think for the most part, it's over with now.
They've won one game. They're an embarrassment of production.
But that's not off the field. The off the fields are the Easterby and the Deshaun.
Okay.
And you know, and a lot of
Camus
the other.
Camus Grugier-Hill this year, like he left,
but that's
was
not
unhappy.
Even close to Deshaun. That's well, Deshaun's not even close a once to in Easterby a, and the, whatever the hell that experiment
Easterby
was.
Easterby kind of crossed both, though. Like he crossed into both times, though. Like Easterby was still around this year.
What was brought into the organization by Bill O'Brien was empowered by Bill O'Brien.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that we know how many people. Again, completely removing on field, people were removing themselves from being Texans fans because of that dude and all the stuff
but
that
at what
he had
point,
done.
At
or
what
those
point,
dudes.
At what point were people mad about that? At what point were people mad about Easterby? At what point did they start to see it?
I think it started when Bill O'Brien kept saying, me and Jack this, me and Jack that, including the Hopkins trade, including some of the things that
which
they were.
Which was offseason of 2019, and they won 10 games prior to that. Like, that's when you first saw Easterby rear his ugly head, and I get that. Look, I think both of them were miserable, right? You were making the playoffs 9-7, Brian, but you never felt the Texans were a true contender. Right. Like, I understand that. I don't think it was less miserable than now, though. Like, where you're looking at four wins and the best thing that you have to look forward to is April 27th in the NFL draft. At least you were going to the playoffs. At least you had a quarterback who was top 10 in the NFL. Like, I feel like it's more miserable now than it was then. And you bring up that word hope. Like, and maybe that's also, like, another part of this question. What do you have to see going forward to where this current tenure, this current era, passes the Bill O'Brien era? Because right now it doesn't. Right now it doesn't even come close.
No, and I understand what you're saying from an on-field perspective, but I also believe that hope has such a massive value, and you don't have to be an optimist to understand that that there's a reason why you want to keep hope alive, because people believe that the best days are yet to come with the way they're doing things now, with the fact that all of that, no matter how much of a negative and how many blemishes it left, that those are scars that are going to be behind you now and that you're going to go move forward. Because on the field, right, there is something to be said about winning divisions, but you become the Cleveland baseball team. Essentially, you're going to win divisions and then basically understand no matter, you maybe you win a playoff series or two, but you ain't going anywhere.
What's the hope now, though, like right now? Like
it's, I think the hope is within the next 5 years, that you are a really strong playoff contender with a chance to win a Super Bowl.
But what are the tangible things that lead to hope? Like, I would say it's probably the draft picks. Yeah. Young players, you're going to have number one pick, top 10 pick, two first-round
picks. You're
going
to get your franchise quarterback this summer.
You're hoping. I think it's more a hope.
Right.
Like, those are the tangible things. I think that because we're so far removed from Bill O'Brien and we saw how it tragically came to an end, crashing and burning, Bill O'Brien's Texans had hope. It wasn't in Bill O'Brien. But when Deshaun Watson was here and when Deshaun Watson started playing well, people were saying that Deshaun Watson was going to win a Super Bowl for the Houston Texans. So hope existed more in the Bill O'Brien tenure than it did now, because Deshaun Watson was tangible. The draft picks are tangible, but they're also draft picks.
But just like anything else, even when Deshaun was drafted, there was hope at that time, but you didn't know what he truly was going to turn out to be. Even a Mahomes, who wasn't the first quarterback off the board, there were questions and doubts about him that he had to prove. So you can say, well, you know what? As it turned out, this happened. But we don't know how this is going to turn out going forward.
Sure.
And the thing for me is,
but we haven't lived that yet, though. But, like, we've only lived what we've lived.
Right. But I think most fans, and I don't know, that's why I'm curious to hear from the Hive, because for me personally, I don't want to relive any of all the negatives that, and there were too many with Bill O'Brien, to where I got to believe that you learn lessons from that, and also that the next regime isn't going to do that, to where the future's got to be better.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Kevin. Kevin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, good evening, fellas. How y'all doing on this Turkey Day Eve?
Doing great.
Hey, man, look. I don't care about that Bill O'Brien or what he did while he was here. What he didn't do while he was here was win the Super Bowl. What he also didn't do while he was here was get him even to a Super Bowl. So at the end of the day, you play the games to win the games, to get the championships, to win championships. And if you're not achieving those things as a GM or a head coach, you're replaceable at any point in your career. So to say, would you rather the Bill O'Brien era? What did Bill O'Brien do that was so spectacular that you would prefer his era over what's going on now?
Hang tight,
Kevin. At least for me.
Yeah, no, I get your point, because we do all aspire to win championships, especially with what the Astros have going on. You want to have a Super Bowl championship in Houston. And Bill O'Brien wasn't going to give you that. And it's not like they should have kept Bill O'Brien. That's not the conversation here. The conversation is like, how is your life? Which of the two eras, Bill O'Brien, post-Bill O'Brien, which one's more miserable? Because you point to Bill O'Brien never winning a Super Bowl. Sure. Never went to a Super Bowl. Sure. Never went to an AFC championship game. Sure. Went to the playoffs. Post-Bill O'Brien's went four wins, one win so far. You tell me which one's worse.
Okay, yeah, but let me complete where I am. If I'm going to go for somebody's era, I'm going to go back to Kubiak's era if I'm going to go back to any previous Texans head coach. Now, you talk about Billy O. My point is, if you're not contending or winning Super Bowls, I don't think that's anything to grasp for. I think sometimes, man, we allow these people to be mediocre in the city of Houston, and what the Astros have proven, that if you put a contender or a winner on the field, hey, we'll support you. At least right now, if we're talking about the now, at least right now, what I can say, and I'm not even a huge Texans guy. Like, I like what they're doing. I think they're sort of headed in the right direction by building this roster from the ground up. I didn't like the draft pick of Stingley, but okay, that's fine. But if I'm going to go with something, I'm going to go with the now. Okay, you got one win, but at least you got some capital going forward to build a roster into a contender.
Appreciate the call, Kevin. I want to react to that on the other side. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What's more miserable as a Texans fan, the O'Brien era or post-Bill O'Brien? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, tell you about Fitz Roofing. Look, I've been telling you about Fitz Roofing for quite a while. They're the best in the business at doing roofing, and that is commercial projects, businesses, your house. From a leaky roof to a whole new roof, they'll take care of you every step of the way. Best ratings in the business. They also have the best warranties They do it the right way, starting with the best product, CertainTeed Shingles. But they even do more so than just roofing. They do home repairs. They do fences. They put a fence in my yard. It's just, it's night and day in terms of the curb appeal and how great the yard looks now. And they did a phenomenal job. They did it exactly how they said they were going to do it. The big thing now is as we get through hurricane season, we get all this rainy weather, you want to find out before it's too late that your roof might need some repairs. Check it out by going and getting a free no-obligation inspection from Fitz today. Most companies will charge you $75 to $100 just to come to your house and see what's going on. They don't charge a thing because they believe in the services that they offer and they want to take care of Houstonians every step of the way. Just call them, 832-521-3001. Have them come to you and they can tell you what they can do. They're not going to have any obligation to you or charge you a fee. They're going to go on with the rest of their day. You want them to actually do the work? Just book them and realize before, during, and after the sale, they're the best at doing what they do, and that's roofing and a whole lot more. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's a miserable time to be a Texans fan. More miserable now or the O'Brien era? Kevin talked about Kubiak, which I think is a straw man argument. We weren't talking about the Kubiak thing at all. One thing that hurts O'Brien is that what happened basically towards the end of O'Brien and then how he set up the organization going forward, right? And he wasn't well-liked either. Right. Like, so being disliked and the way that he positioned the organization and started the spiral downward is why we look at the O'Brien tenure and probably have a more negative reaction to it than what it really is. I mean, 4 playoff appearances in 6 full seasons. Gary Kubiak had 2 playoff appearances in 7 full seasons. Bill O'Brien was more successful as a head coach with the Houston Texans than Gary Kubiak was. But why do we remember Kubiak more fondly? One, he was likable. O'Brien wasn't. 2, Kubiak's team was like in a better chance to have success post-Kubiak than O'Brien was post-O'Brien.
A hometown guy, too. I mean, hometown guy, easy to pull for. Not the brash, abrasive, aggressive Bill O'Brien with the media and the fans. To me, the opposite of that, when we had the conversation last segment, was just, and I forgot about the fact that whether you put it on Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien or not, part of the Bill O'Brien era was swinging and missing on Brock Osweiler, as well as all the other negatives that I brought up. And that was so tough for people to stomach because those are the reasons why they might not have gotten to a Super Bowl, because those missteps cost them draft picks, cost them players, did things, cost them, you know, finances that you didn't want to spend on a guy that sucked that bad that you had to suck it up and give up more draft capital to get rid of. Inevitably, you got it right if you're Rick Smith because you got Deshaun Watson. But I think that so much of my argument is based on no matter what the winning the divisions was and the fact that you can't argue he was a winning football coach, it was everything that he did off the field. And then when he took the general manager reins, it took it to another level of angst. And then he hired Jack Easterby, and that's when everybody was over the top.
Sure. All of the things, though, that you kind of pointed to, they've also happened since then. Like, Brock Osweiler was a misstep. So was Davis Mills as a third-rounder.
But that's a third-rounder as opposed to 36. What did he get? And at that point, it was expensive, but he got 6 years.
But it didn't cost you really other players, and you also were willing to move on in a year, and then ultimately it ended up with Deshaun Watson.
But it cost you by the fact that you could cut him or get rid of him, but then in order to get the quarterback you needed, it costed you draft.
I think it was a third.
To move up with Cleveland?
To move up in the trade for Deshaun. I'm talking about the trade with Cleveland where you traded a draft pick plus Brock Osweiler to get out of the contract.
Oh, well, then you had to make another trade to get another quarterback, which meant you lost draft capital.
Nick Caserio's traded up, too, with a team who's pretty, pretty bad. Davis Mills looks like a wasted third-round draft pick, although he had some starts, rookie year, second year. What is a more miserable time? Right now it's miserable, as Houston Texans fans. More miserable now, more miserable then. Then you were going to the playoffs. Were you underachieving? Yeah. Were you falling short of the Super Bowl? Yeah. But you were winning more than 4 games. You were winning more than 1 game. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Nick, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Nick?
Hey, when y'all came back, you were kind of making my point when I was calling it about I'd rather be in now's era than the Bill O'Brien era, because everyone could see the reason the Texans are 1-8 right now is because Bill O'Brien. It's not because of Lovie Smith, Davis Mills. It doesn't matter who your quarterback is on this team. It doesn't matter who your head coach is. You're going to suck with what's left on this team. Bill O'Brien never built up this team. His entire tenure, he wrote off the Kubiak, Rick Smith fumes of J.J. Watt, Andre Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, all those guys from that era rolled over into Bill O'Brien's beginning, and he never added to the kitchen. He just depleted and threw everything away and left us with trash, man. So I'd rather be right now where fresh start, new. Yeah, we suck. We're going to suck for a while. But you know what? Like whoever said, I have bigger aspirations than what we were under Bill O'Brien. So, and then, yeah, part two on that, we don't need to be drafting a quarterback next year either, because it's not going to make any difference.
Appreciate the call, Nick. Now, would you consider this the last 3 years? Because I'm pointing to the last 3 years, four wins, currently one win. Is it the Bill O'Brien era? Like, I understand that he depleted the team. He made the DeAndre Hopkins trade. He traded draft capital. I wouldn't agree to Nick's point where he wasn't adding, because a lot of times he added too willingly, right? Laramie Tunsil ring a bell.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he was too willing to add. He was overpaying.
Gave it away.
Right.
Way too much.
Like, and look, I'm not happy with Bill O'Brien's tenure and the way that it ended. He put your franchise back. But it's also not his regime anymore. Like, the moment that he got fired, it was no longer his regime. Was he responsible for some of the failures of where this organization's at? Absolutely. Is he responsible for some of the, like, is he responsible for the talent level of the 53-man roster because of trades that he made? Yes, absolutely. But the moment he was fired, it's no longer his era.
See, that's where I'd push back because of the fact, and disagree, because I said over and over again, even though Bill, the human being, is physically gone out of the building and no longer employed by the Houston Texans, it's going to take years to overcome the hole he left behind. The way he dug you, it's one thing to say we're starting from scratch, Bill O'Brien's gone. But really, were you? No, because you gave up draft capital that could have helped you immensely. You were trying to survive some of the horrible contracts that he made for kickers and centers and paying those guys to be top six paid at their position when they weren't worthy of it. And doing all the missteps that he did left a stank and a scab and a scar that was going to take a couple of years to get over before you could truly, fairly start the new regime. I get the fact that the minute he walks out the door and is no longer on the payroll, it's physically over. But from the standpoint of from a franchise, I think it's 2 years just to kind of overcome all the crap he left behind.
If Deshaun Watson was never a pervert and Deshaun Watson never demanded a trade, would you have optimism for this organization?
Yeah. I think so, because I had my franchise quarterback, and it's the most important position on the field. And I think that you would entice more players to want to play here, and it would be easier to rebuild. The fact that you are talking about, and I was going to say that last segment, the big unfortunate thing in this discussion is you have to wrap the two, and they coincided, right? If you had the franchise quarterback, and this was just about the coach and general manager leaving, it could be a different discussion. The hole was deeper and the remnants stronger for the Texans fans was because Deshaun did what he did at the same time Bill O'Brien was doing what he did. And now it's such a stank. It's such a long-term ramification.
The timeline was different. Bill O'Brien got fired 4 games into 2020. Deshaun Watson demanded a trade offseason 2020.
Okay, but again, okay, that's fine. I'm just saying, Deshaun is connected to the Bill O'Brien era by the fact that he was the franchise quarterback
but that's kind of the point I was trying to make. Like, if he never demands the trade and he's still within the organization and you have hope, are you still, like, besmirking Bill O'Brien leaving this organization in this awful, awful spot?
But he didn't bring Deshaun in.
No, he didn't. But Deshaun was from his era, and he enjoyed playing with Bill O'Brien, and they had success together.
Yeah, but I think that, like you said, the era stops and the new era begins the minute that that guy in Bill O'Brien's case is gone.
Then why are we still bleeding over Jack Easterby moves that were happening after Bill O'Brien? Because
a lot of those moves are either on the roster or still, like a Brandon Cooks, who's a distraction and is not nearly
but
whoever.
That's kind of picking and choosing what counts and what doesn't count.
I'm just answering your question. I'm saying the fact that just like Bill O'Brien can't completely be erased from memory when the fact that the holes that he left and the scabs that he left are still there and they're still dealing with them, to show you how it's a long-standing negative just because he's out the door doesn't completely go away.
They just haven't recovered from it either. Like, they have not been good since Bill O'Brien. Like, no one liked Bill O'Brien. I didn't like Bill O'Brien. Like, I'm sitting here, making an argument for Bill O'Brien. I couldn't stand Bill O'Brien. I thought he was lousy.
He was arrogant,
all of that. I thought that he never got the most out of his teams. I felt his teams were better than a lot of the seasons that he had. So, like, I get all of the points. I totally understand all the points. I just don't understand how you can argue a playoff caliber team, you're watching your team in the playoffs versus you're watching your team get embarrassed by the Washington Commanders, a mediocre team in the NFC.
It's because of the fact, like I said, hope is the key word.
But Deshaun was that hope.
But now when you ask the question, how can you not want that? Because I believe the hope is that this next regime is going to turn into more. It's going to turn into more than just winning the division and one and dones.
But that existed with Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien. Like, when Deshaun Watson was rolling and they were winning 10 and 11 games the 2 years Deshaun Watson was here, his sophomore and his junior years in the NFL, people were saying Deshaun Watson was going to bring a Super Bowl to the Texans. So hope existed more tangibly than any sort of hope now.
Okay, but just when given the choice and knowing how it all ended as opposed to not knowing how this one's going to end, I think more almost everybody's jumping on board to seeing how this one plays out,
sure,
because they could. It's so tough to swallow all the different negative chapters and the final ending.
But a lot of that's post-mortem. You know what I'm saying? Like, during the time that Deshaun was winning 11 games and was in his second year in the NFL, at that particular moment, people thought Deshaun was going to win a Super Bowl with the Texans. That moment does not exist currently. Like, the only moment that's going to bring that is maybe Bryce Young. But that's more hope than tangible.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's completely centered around hope. But I think that's why so many people are jumping back on board, because they would rather take the optimistic hope approach than have to relive all the negativity that came with the success on the field that Bill O'Brien and his teams had.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, of course. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We are on the eve of Thanksgiving. We're on the eve of it. Tomorrow we feast. We eat all the great stuff. What's the best thing about Thanksgiving? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is a Thanksgiving Eve edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. What's the best thing about Thanksgiving?
Oh, I think first and foremost, it's always got to be, it doesn't have to necessarily be family, but it's got to be kind of getting together with those that you care about and just hanging out and not having to worry about stresses and everything else, and just being able to relax and chat it up and have some good food.
Yeah, it's always about family for me. Family first and foremost. Family is the most important thing about Thanksgiving. Absolutely it is. Spending time with loved ones, spending time with people that you love. But a very, 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 very close second is all the food. I cannot wait to feast tomorrow. I might not even eat dinner tonight, so I can make sure that I can have as much food as I possibly can tomorrow.
Well, it's perfect, because Thanksgiving is all about the three F's, right? It's family, food, and football. And my answer is the football.
Yeah, football is very fun.
I haven't been home.
Your team is always playing on Thanksgiving,
too. I haven't been home for Thanksgiving in, I think this will be the seventh year in a row now. So the family part, you know, it doesn't stand as much for me recently. But I always look forward to football on Thanksgiving.
You know, it's different, too, because with our business, and especially Jeremy, with your travel schedule, but forever and a day working in the NBA, the holidays were work days, because you had games, and it was an easy way to get families to the games if you were the Rockets, or we played on Christmas. So it was always, like Brennan was saying, I didn't see my family as much. I actually got used to not seeing my family as opposed to looking forward to and seeing everybody every year. And you realize how much you appreciate it when you can't have it. So when you get back to it, it actually means something. That's why I said a lot of times it's not just your blood relatives, but it's the friends that, because for the longest time when I was single and working for the Rockets, I knew a lot of different people, a lot of friends of mine that didn't have anywhere to go. And I was like, just everybody come over to my house and we'll watch football and bring something and we'll make it a Thanksgiving feast on our own. And just the spending time with people is the most important thing.
So what is your favorite thing about Thanksgiving? 713-780-ESPN. Brent, if you're not going home, you can travel to Norman, Oklahoma with me whenever we end the show, and you can hang out with my family if you want to get a little feast and, you know, have a little road trip.
I do appreciate the offer. I will be spending my time with my family of this radio station right here in the studio.
Very good. Very good. Man of the people. That's football, right? You said football is one of your favorite things about Thanksgiving. You'll be watching football tomorrow.
Yeah,
you'll be listening
absolutely
to football tomorrow.
You want us to start a Brendan-a-thon so that people could bring favorite side dishes and things so that you have plenty of food?
You got to remember, I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the Thanksgiving food anyways.
Yeah, you're just weird.
See, that's, I love Thanksgiving dinner, like for the 3, 4, 5 days around Thanksgiving. I don't eat, I eat like deli meat turkey, but in terms of like turkey prepared that way, give me some turkey, give me some mashed potatoes, some brown gravy, although I'm not going to kick white gravy, you know, out of the conversation either. I like the cranberry sauce. I know that you do not. And then you, and the stuffing, all of that like combined for one bite is unbelievable. It's unbelievable for Thanksgiving and like the 3 days after it.
Now, because there's lots of questions that come with this, but I'm with you though. I mean, like Lisa asked me, obviously, for those that you don't know, and most do, that she's vegan, and she's like, do you want to go vegan with me this year? I go, no, absolutely not. I mean, the big thing for me is that once a year, I look forward to the turkey, and part that turkey being part of the meal, and it's awesome. And I'm the same as you, mashed potatoes and stuffing and gravy, and I like macaroni and cheese, so I want some mac and cheese in there, and that's about it for me with the stuffing. I'm good. I don't need much else after that. But then you're right. It's like, how much? There's so many questions. Like, how many times are you going to go? Do you have just the regular sit down, the big meal? But will you go twice to the big to the big meal food in the same day? And then with the leftovers, are you just warm it up, or are you sandwiches or both?
I've never really dabbled in the sandwich game.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. That's I think I need to try.
Yes.
I think I need to try. But I'm more of a, like, I'll start eating around. What time do y'all start eating? We eat, like, 1 or 2.
Yeah, we do it kind of early, between 2 and 3.
1 or 2, 2 or 3, like, early afternoon. And then I probably don't stop eating for the rest of the night until I fall asleep that night. Now, I'll have, like, my one meal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I load up the plate, have that. And then it's, like, kind of gradually, like, every 45 minutes to an hour, having very, very small plates, like tapas Thanksgiving, where I have a couple pieces of turkey with mashed potatoes and gravy, and then, of course, the desserts. So, like, I pretty much start eating early afternoon and will not stop eating until I literally cannot eat anymore.
Now, do y'all leave leave everything out and you just keep going to it?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically what we do, too, is, like, it's everything's out there, and so whenever you want, you know, help yourself and go get some more. And I think that's the best way to do it because, I mean, to me, it's like in between football games. It's not like normally when I'm watching games, something like I might grab some popcorn or something like that. But I'm not snacking while watching the games. I'm kind of timing it out between games or at halftime to where I go back in and reload. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely a day where it's feast all day and get all the way through. But the sandwich thing, that is a hidden gem.
Do you go regular bread or do you go like the rolls that you have with the Thanksgiving meal?
Rolls with the meal. Bread, I toasted bread for the sandwiches.
I think I would like to go with the sandwich on the rolls.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Like, that sounds really good. Like, I love rolls, too. Like, right? Like, I just mentioned my plate, the perfect plate. Turkey, mashed potatoes, the brown gravy, the stuffing, a little bit of cranberry. Like, imagine getting all of that stuff and then just stuffing it into, like, a Hawaiian roll.
It would work.
That sounds fantastic.
That would work. I mean, I would only think that you're getting screwed by the amount that you could fit in there as opposed to the big size of a sandwich.
You can have more than one roll.
Yeah.
You can just mass, you know,
you've created
accumulate
your own
volume.
Your Thanksgiving kolache of goodness is just like opening up and stuffing in a Hawaiian roll with all the Thanksgiving food you can.
Dick Willie says rolls, basically like making sliders. I think that's the way to go. Rolls are fantastic. I love rolls. Rolls are great. What do you love about Thanksgiving? Flimsy says sandwiches for leftovers.
That's
I got to try that. I need to expand that game. I've never really been to the
toasted
sandwich
bread, game. Leftover turkey, lettuce and tomato and all that. Oh, yeah.
Chewy says, I want to have stuffing for the turkey. Give me some mac and cheese, potato salad, and some cranberry on the side. I've never really heard potato salad for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no, me either.
That's a first for me.
And growing up in the Midwest, and my mom made potato salad all the time, and it was fantastic. But we never had potato salad. And we had potato salad for a lot of holidays, too, just not Thanksgiving.
I actually have a question for you guys, because there was a debate going on in my group chat that I wasn't sure of the answer to. All of my friends who live in Michigan, by the way, were debating whether or not people in the South have mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving.
Oh, my goodness. What? That's a staple.
I thought so, too. But there was, like, half of my group chat was arguing that mashed potatoes are not a popular Thanksgiving food in the South.
I would say it's the second most popular Thanksgiving food.
I don't know if they were counting Texas as the South, but I would think they are.
No, it's the second most popular Thanksgiving food, and it's the top side. There's not a higher side than mashed potatoes.
I would absolutely agree with that. Mashed potatoes,
that's the way I look at it.
Mashed potatoes with the gravy is the number one side.
Who are your friends?
So they're all people in Michigan.
What do they eat? What's their top side?
The mashed potatoes. They were saying it's not as popular in the South. I don't know where they were getting this information, being as they all live in Michigan.
Can you ask them this?
Where they got it?
Yeah, like why they think this. Like, I want to know why they think that all of a sudden you go to the South and they don't have mashed potatoes. Like mashed potatoes were invented in the South.
I could check with them.
That's bizarre to me. E says that they have some of their best wine on Thanksgiving. I've never really been much of a, well, I have a little bit of whiskey on Thanksgiving, maybe at night, but I don't want it to like get in the way of all the eating, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'll finish the night maybe with a crown and diet.
Yeah.
For the late
it's
game?
It's like the nightcap, you know?
And it also kind of settles the stomach to basically let the stomach know and the boiler room know, okay, I'm not going to force feed you anymore. It's not, you can relax too. We're just going to do this and slowly fade off into la-la land.
E, which this isn't a surprise because we understand his behavior on our Twitch. He says food, family, football, fighting. Like, I'm not – are you fighting on Thanksgiving? Like, you get together with your relatives and you're having fights on Thanksgiving?
Didn't plan on digging into
the politics.
The blank family history.
All the politics.
But I will tell you that that was a staple in my household. That when, growing up, that not now – but growing up in my household, it was inevitable that everybody was going to be there. It was going to be a large gathering, and it would start out super fantastically friendly and happy. And as the alcohol would start flowing and conversations would get deeper into family histories or things that had happened over the course of the year, it would get a little bit, it would ratchet it up a little bit to where almost guaranteed every holiday someone ended up fighting with somebody.
I would bet that's not that uncommon.
It seems like it would be more frequent even nowadays too, because there's so much more to fight about. Like you said, politics in itself is one thing, but you know, with everybody on social media looking to fight every chance they get anyway. But I would think that it's not as unusual as it maybe was back then, because back then we kind of tried to dust it under the rug. But yeah, we were pretty, our family knew something was probably going to, someone's feelings were going to get hurt by the end of the night.
Whenever I was a kid, we would always play like basketball and stuff.
Oh,
like,
that too, yeah.
We'd always do that, like games, things like that. Like the Branham competitive spirit would come through.
Oh man, and because a lot of my friends growing up, we were single parent families, or they had a lot of stuff going on to where they didn't have a whole lot going on after like 4 o'clock. Then everybody came over to our house, and the door was always open. You're always welcome to the food. And so a lot of my friends ended up at, you know, early evening into the evening at our place. Then it was football or basketball or, like you said, board games, video games, whatever. But everybody was there. That was the fun part. The food and the early day, that's where the fighting could happen. Get the family out of there and just get the friends in and hang out at night. That was always great.
What is your favorite thing about Thanksgiving? So Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.